Backseat Producers, episode 301, LA Confidential.
Pretty good.
Good.
I got everything I wanted for Christmas, so booyah. That doesn't happen all the time.
Well, didn't happen.
and then we bought a truck.
Whoa.
Well, there you go.
This was not, you know, that was not the thing that I wanted, but, you know.
What kind of truck would you get?
An F-150.
Ford?
Yes.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And it went. Clearly. You're not a truck owner.
No, I am not a truck owner, and I will never be a Ford owner. So,
he will never know.
Well, so we got this, and so this is Sean's baby, obviously. And he was basically like, I am doing countless hundreds of hours of research.
So to be fair, he looks like a truck guy.
Yeah, well,
he looks like the kind of guy. Yeah. He looks like the kind of guy that would
what are
comfortably
you going to
enjoy
use
a truck.
The truck for?
Well. Funny you should ask. The original intention was that we were going to buy a truck because we're going to have to move. Presumably, we might be moving across the country. I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
So you're going to be moving across the country at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Is it like a job transfer or other reason or...
Well, kind of another reason.
Okay.
Because we have friends that live in Seattle, mm-hmm. and you know, we don't necessarily. I can take the job with me there.
It's so. Portable. Okay.
Yeah. So that was the original intent. Also, he's a very tall guy.
So sedans don't quite fit him very well.
Right. Exactly.
All right.
So there are not a lot of cars that he can fit in.
Okay. All right.
Oh no. Oh, no.
Hey, Joel. No school.
Another day.
Due to unsafe road conditions and unsafe passing to be able to get to school, they've called it off.
They just might as well scratch this whole week. Yeah, they're burning their snow days.
Well, yeah, that means you're going to be
they are not,
going
they are not
late
going to
summer.
Be in school until May 28th.
Yeah. Well, burn the whole week.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot of the
school.
Well,
this is also, they were out two full weeks for Christmas.
Yeah.
And they were supposed to go back on Monday. This Sunday is when it hit. So they have not been back to school yet.
Oh,
thank
geez.
God my parents live like 5 minutes from here. Literally 5 minutes from
yeah.
here. So.
Well, I've been off for 3 days myself because they don't want me risking the van on the
wow.
road.
Wow. So you were off today, too?
Yeah. They said, wow. Stay home. If we really need you, we'll call you up and dispatch you. It's just stay home. We don't want you to risk your neck or the van.
But you do installs and stuff like that, too, right?
So, it's been slow period, too.
Yeah. I would bet there's a lot of companies aren't even open to be able to do it.
Only thing we're handling is emergency
yeah,
dispatches.
Yeah, we haven't started. But...
Did your parents happen to play before tomorrow?
Yeah, I said something to them when I got there that school was on unless this 1 inch of snow that we're supposed to get tonight does something. And Dad was like, well, we'll be here, so.
Yes, I spent both Sunday, well, most of the day Monday digging out and helping the neighbors dig out because I have the only snowblower that's a 13 horsepower
yeah.
snowblower.
Is it deep enough to actually?
Yes, it's got a 2 foot deep and a 36.
Yeah, I heard.
It's got a 30-inch mouth on it,
nice.
And it can throw it about 20 feet.
Wow.
So it makes short work of 10 inches.
That's, well.
So I've spent most of the day plowing everybody's 30-inch
mouth. Yeah, I would imagine it could handle 10 inches pretty easily.
You said it, not me.
It's a monster. We bought it used back in the 80s. We don't use it very often, but when we do use it, we put it to good use.
Yeah.
Wow. It's the first time we've started it up in 2 years, and because we had any snow last year worth beans or anyone before that. This is the first time I think I've seen over a foot of snow on the ground in God knows how many years.
It's been a while.
We did snow a lot last
year. No, we had a lot of ice last March.
Is that the thing that happened?
It was like 2 inches of like solid ice.
So when is this move potentially supposed to happen?
Oh, it's not. It's probably going to be a year at least.
Okay. It's not anything soon.
No.
Okay.
No. But.
So you'll be here for Sausage Fest is what you're saying.
Yes, thanks. Important
thing. One more Sausage Fest.
Important things to note.
Well, you know, I still have to come back. You know, my family still lives here. So I'm sure I'll be back all the time anyway. And so if I just happen to come back every October.
And if you just happen to be here on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
So
you can, right, you can
show up to record.
Then I could show up, right. But this is not going to be for a while. But okay. We have already had a large dispute about what we're going to name it. Because it's a long bed, it's black, and it's huge. And so
there are some obvious names that come to mind.
Well, this is where the argument comes in, because my first thought is we have to call it Black Dynamite. And so Sean says we should call it Tyler Perry. So every time he's like, you know, we gotta go, let's go get into Tyler Perry, and I'm like, you mean Black Dynamite. So the name is still in flux, but
Black Dynamite. No, how Black Beauty would be another choice?
That's too poetic, though.
Too poetic.
It's okay. Too poetic, because my car, you know, which is my car that I have an unnatural obsession with, because it's my 3-cylinder Geo.
Hey, I had one of those myself.
Yeah.
They're great little cars.
Love that car.
Yes. Especially when it comes to trying to parallel park them.
Exactly. And the gas mileage. But yeah, we've been together, me and the Geo have been together for years, but I named it the Beast.
The Beast.
So the name is important.
Do you name all your cars?
Of course, yeah.
I've seen that little Geo you drive. I'm imagining you're not driving it too much right now.
I actually just drove it today for the first time since it snowed.
Yeah, I can.
Actually, they do quite well in the snow. I buzzed mine around in Pennsylvania snows.
They're very, very
sure-footed.
Light. They're very light. They're, you know, they're about like...
I mean, to be fair, if you get stuck, you can pick it up.
Pretty
just
much.
Move it.
Yes, you can. That's the thing. Is it so light that it kind of, you know, it doesn't dig in very hard, so...
The only bad thing is it's low ground clearance. If you hit a large snowbank and your wheels come up, you're stuck.
Yeah.
You better have a winch to pull yourself off.
That has indeed happened to me, but that happened to me last time it snowed, but... So it doesn't get out much in deep snow. I mean, let's be honest.
But anything else, it's only very rarely.
Right. So, but every, you know, like the other 9 months of the year, it's great.
This is an aberration anyway, so.
This is a generational thing.
Right. Well, and
none of these vehicles will probably have survived if it takes as long to get to the next one of these as we had the last one.
In somewhere in the 80s, they said if you're under 40 years old, you've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, I remember the one in 82. He was that one was I remember it because like it happened on like a Saturday night into Sunday morning, and like we were off school for a week. Like there was not even a question. It was just like you're not going to be going to school this week.
Forget it. Yeah,
we built tunnels in it. Because it was, like, with the drifts and stuff, there were drifts that were multiple feet high. So we built tunnels in it. We had, we lived in base housing. And the way the housing was set up, you know, you live in units with four families to a unit, a double two-story unit. Mm-hmm. And they built these, the way they built them, they built one on, like, everybody's backyards were actually part of a carport.
Mm-hmm.
So and that went around a block. So the way they set it up, we had this one, everybody had this massive front yard that mm-hmm. was like, I mean, you could literally play a 10 man aside football team and play football in our front yard and have almost a full run. It was huge. Our baseball games, we never had to worry about hitting into anybody's house unless you went into left field, too far into middle field. That was unfortunate, but or you get onto the road.
Yeah.
But But yeah, we had this massive field, and the way it was, there was four units, so four on this side, four on that side, and two right here with this long courtyard in between us. And in those 16 units, there were probably 12 kids.
Yeah.
You know, if not more than that, at least of about a similar age.
Right.
Because, I mean, for the most part, military families have a span of ages.
Right.
Before you either start moving off base or you just don't have kids at, you know, at that age. So there was probably a dozen or so of us. And we had like this massive snowball war. we were getting kids from other blocks to come over to join in. It was pretty epic.
Epic.
That happened to me in college once, but the thing that spurred it on was quite different. But yeah, I do remember having a massive in front of door, a couple of snowball fights. It's good times, especially if you've been drinking.
Well, yeah, because you're
everything
numb.
Improves.
Everything is better.
And that's the call to my cell phone.
My goodness.
From the emergency alert system. Julie's got her stairs about losing already.
Yes.
Yeah, so if I leave this bit in the recording, we are recording this on January the 8th.
After Snowmageddon.
Yeah, this is Wednesday after Sunday's snowpocalypse hit.
We've all survived, more or less.
More or less. Some of us haven't worked a couple of days. Some of us... Did you work?
Yes.
You worked the whole time?
The whole time.
I had to work from home on Monday. They closed the office. It was one of those, the office is closed. Unless there is an emergency and you're called in, you are not allowed to come to work. But if, unfortunately, I'm one of the people that actually had the option. If your boss says it's okay, and my boss did, I could work from home. And I could either choose to work from home or take a vacation day. So I chose to work from home because, like, I'm not going to burn a vacation day.
Not having that much
if I
fun.
Have if I have that option, and I had a lot of year-end reports still to wrap up. We just got done with that Garden Glow thing. So I had a bunch of reports from that. So I to park my ass right here and do a bunch of reports.
Not that much of a stress.
It really, I mean, the it wouldn't have been a whole lot different than what I would have done if I would have gone into work that day.
Just save yourself the commute time.
Except I spent $20 on holding shoveling.
Okay.
So.
Hey.
That was good. He earned some bucks, and I didn't have to shovel. So, bonus.
Imagine
there.
He was sore.
Yeah.
See, the thing that my employer did was generously, they said, well, we're not closing, but you don't have to wear ties. Oh. So,
whoa,
look
wow.
at how, I know, look out. You get to go business casual. So, you know,
hey,
I don't want to brag.
Those ties get in the way when you're shoveling. We understand that, and we just don't want you to choke on your own tie when you're shoveling yourself out.
Well, and then it became the situation where it's like, I went in on Monday, and I really just went in because I could, because I could have worked at home, but I was not getting any work done at home. So I went in, and I'm literally wearing two pairs of pants and snow boots, and it's like, seriously, you could have just, you know, with this few people here, nobody's going to notice or care to come in jeans, seriously.
Yeah.
Jerks.
Yeah, fortunately, I'm wearing what I wear to work, jeans and a shirt. So there's still a lot of activity going upstairs, so we're going to wait just a few more minutes before we start the official recording. Anybody see anything good over our break?
No, not really. Kind of just too busy doing other things.
Yeah.
I was hoping to get to see The Hobbit. I still hope to by the end of the week.
Well, you've got till Wednesday. Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, good.
Next Wednesday is when we're going to do it.
Yes.
I saw that. I saw Wolf Wall Street. I saw American Hustle. And
so you may have already taken care of one or two of the Oscar movies. Depending on the buzz. I mean, the buzz is sounding like...
Right, and
those
then,
could be up.
Well, there's two movies that are coming up that are just now opening wide, I think this week, Inside Llewyn Davis, which of course I'm very excited about as a Coen Brothers fan, and then Her.
Yes.
Which yeah. also
Siri hates it.
I'm kind of excited to see Her. It looks like the more serious cousin to Lars and the Real Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
No, it's one we have not seen. I've read a lot about it. But
I've seen it. Mm-hmm. It is an interesting movie. It's one of those movies that is just like, man, is this thing going to be a freak show or what? And it's got a surprising amount of heart to it. It really does.
Well, imagine what I've read of that movie is like, you want to feel for this guy because the only connection with any emotions he has is with a life-size doll.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of that same thing, except it's all, I mean, in that movie, it's all in his head. There's no no one that he's communicating with.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like her is more.
Well, actually, he is talking with the AI.
An AI, yeah.
And also it's Spike Jonze. And there's just certain, like, I have to trust Spike Jonze just because he's done a lot of really good stuff, so.
Well, it's also something we may actually be seeing within a few years, is in real life, people really do falling for an artificial intelligence at some point, having enough emotional connection.
I mean, it's no different than Archer. I mean, Archer's already telling that story with Krieger and the anime. Do you watch Archer?
I catch it occasionally. Yes.
So the mad scientist character of the group has this anime hologram that he is in love with.
And, well, like, tell you the truth, I've actually seen some stuff on some of the anime sites about people who do fall in love with anime characters, and one of them has actually gotten married to one.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Yes. Now, granted, whether this guy was super serious or not, or he was just goofing on people, the problem is the more I read about some of this stuff, it gets either this, like, you either want to say this poor slob. I mean, good God, it's that. Is that the best they can get?
Sure.
Or are you just crazy?
Yeah, I mean, I saw some footage somewhere that someone had posted a woman who was in love with a Ferris wheel.
A Ferris wheel?
Yeah.
Mm. But he takes her for a spin, huh?
It's an odd choice. It's a really, like...
I think that relationship goes nowhere. What goes around comes around again.
The Soup featured this one of these odd shows that it was like, I can't even remember what the show was that they were having a clip from.
Yeah, does it matter? Oh,
good Lord, what are they doing? What are they doing? Throwing the furniture from one side to the other?
I'm not hearing screaming either from the person that it happened to or from other people who saw it happen, so we're probably all right. But this guy was like in love with his car and like making love with his car.
Oh, I think I
like,
saw
yes,
that.
Like,
I saw
he
that
was too. Laying up under it, kissing on it. Yeah. It's like, this is weird.
Yeah, this is uncomfortable.
Volkswagen?
Probably.
Okay. I think I saw that exact
same. That explains Speed Buggy.
Vroom, vroom. I hear feet. I thought I heard feet.
Good night.
Good night. Love you. Hey. Get a good night's sleep. Stop banging around up there.
Okay.
Yes, stop jumping off the cabinets. I wasn't. Skydiving into the bed. Oh, he was doing that. Okay.
They're not shy about ratting
him under the bus.
Well, he's been throwing her under the bus all day, so this is just turnabout.
Yes, it's people's unnatural obsession with inanimate objects is fodder for all sorts of movies and TV shows and God knows what else.
With her, at least it seems to have a personality. With Lars and the Real Girl, it looked like a person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Yeah, but
Ferris wheels are more questionable. I don't understand that. It's a much bigger leap to go to Ferris wheels and cars.
Yeah, but if you're trying to put 45 minutes of reality television on TLC, that makes a pretty good story.
For a single story, yeah.
Hey, look at the freaks.
That's true.
There's a lot of freaks out there.
Some more freaky than others.
Yeah, well, clearly.
All right. Well, I have a feeling it's going to stay noisy
for a while.
For a little bit. So let's just go ahead and get started. Hey, this is Tony.
This is Daryl.
This is Jolie.
We're the Backseat Producers, and you're listening to the Noisy Backseat Producers podcast tonight
on all new equipment.
Yeah, we got we're recording on a new Zoom H6 that I partially got for Christmas. Got some gift cards and cash and whatnot, and.
Yes,
picked up the rest. And
yes, replaces a large laptop, a mixing board, and one nice cigar-sized package.
Yeah, it's It's very compact. I like how small it is. It's going to be so much easier to carry around and do recordings like at Archon and stuff. Mm-hmm. We can either record with the capsule mics that are on it, like if we're going to interview somebody, or
do, you can set up a full blown mic, external mics.
Yeah, we can set up the mics, and I mean, I can put all of this equipment into a small
duffel bag. Yes. Yeah,
a small duffel bag will take care of this easily.
Port a studio.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the reason for the noise, if I haven't left it all on there before, is we're recording this just after Snowmageddon, and there's still many inches of snow all over. Not so much on the roads anymore. The side streets are still bad.
Sure.
The side streets still aren't great. But the main roads, the highways are fine.
Yeah.
Unless you're driving like a moron. I did see somebody in the ditch.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, all it takes is one moron swerving at the wrong time and they're in the ditch. I have seen that a couple times. But yeah, we're recording tonight, and the kids just found out they were off school, so it got really noisy.
They're brokenhearted.
Yeah. Yeah, the noises you would have heard would have been the wailing and the gnashing of teeth that went along with finding out that they're not allowed to go back to school.
Yes, they're jumping off the cabinets into the bed.
Yeah.
They're so tore up about it.
Let's see. This is going to be, I think tomorrow now is their 20th day not in school.
Consecutive.
Well, because they had the 2 weeks for Christmas break,
right?
And then this snowfall hit on Sunday,
yeah.
And they're due to go back on Monday, and tomorrow is Thursday because we record on Wednesdays. So, mm-hmm. So they're this will be their 20th day consecutive not in school. I really feel sorry for those teachers when they go back. It's not going to be a good scene. It's not going to be good at all.
See, I remember these breaks as a kid, and I remember having to go back to school and then not getting to watch The Young and the Restless anymore.
Man, you were on the hardcore stuff.
I was, see, because I was always staying with Grandma, and it was always like, it's time to become really attached to the characters of The Young and the Restless.
Grandma had to watch your stories.
Ripped away. Right, exactly.
I guess the withdrawal was rather painful.
Yes.
At least you didn't hit the super hardcore stuff like General Hospital or All My Children.
Yeah.
That's mainlining.
So, let's see, other news. Adam's not here because he's a wimp. apparently, a little sleep deprivation is too much for him. So
really broken up about
screw that guy
losing.
That's probably what it is. He's probably still sitting Shiva
because it was
not Shiva. Oh, Shiva.
Shiva. Right. Exactly. It was a heartbreaking loss, and I saw it because it was a last minute loss, and that guy's got to be broken hearted. So sad.
I didn't watch the game, but I saw his tweet that was something like fucking 49ers or fuck the 49ers. So I was like, oh, the Packers must have lost.
They did. Last minute loss. It was, even in cold weather. Like, that was the bullshit thing. Like, they're playing, it's like -4 or something, crazy temperature. And Green Bay loses. How do you lose? How does Green Bay lose in cold weather? I don't know.
That's like home field advantage no matter where you're at.
Right, exactly.
Just because of that.
Right.
Well, a lot of them aren't from Wisconsin. They're all transplants from the tropics.
So it's been a while since we've recorded. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since we've released a regular episode. I did release an episode on Christmas Day that I recorded. And if you guys saw something weird in the feed and skipped it, I had a lot of fun recording it. It was from Knights of Rainsboro, Aaron and Polly, Ideology of Madness is the website. They do an actual play of a superhero role-playing game called Knights of Rainsboro, and they've kind of branched off and done some other things with it. They did a one-shot story game called Ghosts of Rainsboro, where they did kind of a supernatural game. And Paul, one of the hosts, wrote a Christmas story, Saints of Rainsboro, and they needed somebody to do the narration for it. And he said, oh, yeah, we've got people to do voices and all that. So I was like, all right, I'll record it. I'm going to record it, and I'm going to do some of the voices because, like, I was bored. I was like, so I'm going to do voices. So I did the gravelly voice, and I did the, kind of weaselly, whiny guy voice. And so I did all these different things. And Paul was like, oh, that's great. You know, if you want to do, you know, if you want to record those, the dialogue in there, that's great, because when I get those voices from other people, I can just, the timing will be right. I can just cut out your part and drop them in. So I don't know what happened.
I don't know.
But my voice is throughout that recording. Oh. So, but I had a lot of fun with it. It sounds great. They added some special effects and music and stuff like that to it. It is worth your time. I think it's only like 20 minutes long. And it's a nice little story. There's not really even a whole lot of superhero-y kind of elements to it. It's really more of a kind of a crime family story. The main character is a priest who comes from a crime family. So it's I had fun with it and dropped that in our feed also on Christmas Day, just because I knew we wouldn't have anything for a couple of weeks. And then last week, illness and hangover and other things hit. So we didn't record last week, which I thought we were going to. So this will be episode 301 that we're recording right now. So we have not pod faded. We have not quit. We just kind of took a little
break.
Holiday break.
So we're actually starting off the new year just perfect.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, tonight we're talking about LA Confidential.
Yeah. We're talking about the Christmas movie.
The 2 minutes that involve Christmas in the movie, like right at the beginning.
Exactly.
Because it's like I saw an article that said this is a Christmas movie, and it's like I don't remember it being a Christmas movie, but what the hell? So now we're, you know, almost halfway through January talking about the Christmas movie with really one scene that implied Christmas in the whole movie.
Sure.
So what'd you think?
This is like, you know, among my more favorite movies since I've seen it so many times, but actually seeing it again, because I have not seen it in several years, I picked, you know, I'm still kind of picking up on stuff that I hadn't before, but it really, really is a great one. I really love this movie.
Second time I've seen this movie, saw it when it first came out, really enjoyed it then. I enjoyed it a little bit more this time because I was able to, like, say, go back and pick up on some of the details I kind of missed. And doing some more research on it and finding out some of the backstory and history on it made it even more interesting. It's fun. It's a enjoyable movie to watch. I mean, not too many thrillers are really thrillers. This one really is.
Yeah. Yeah. And my high-level thoughts are this was when we did our series on noir movies, this easily could have fit into that series of noir movies that we did. I thought this was a really good noir style movie. And in having seen noir movies and when we did that, it fell very much into all those tropes, but delivered. It wasn't, I mean, I'm going to go beyond the high level. It wasn't surprising. There wasn't anything overly flashy or surprising in the story and the characters, if you're familiar with noir flicks, but it delivered a really solid noir movie that was really well done.
Yeah.
And was great. And what's amazing is it's been a long time since I've seen it. I liked it. I've seen it. I saw it a couple times shortly after it came out, and then I owned it on VHS. It's like, I know I have a copy of this movie, but I can't find it anywhere. Oh, that's why. So it's been that long since I've seen it.
We have a copy of this on VHS in the basement.
Yeah.
Because we have no way to play it anymore. But
right. Exactly. Yeah. So that said, it was cool seeing and remembering some of the actors that were in it, like Simon Baker. Having Simon Baker as that
the
young
baby. He was such a baby.
Oh my god, he was so young.
You mentioned that you did other noir movies. What were the other ones that you did?
I don't remember. It's been a while. It's been like a year and a half, 2 years, 100-ish episodes ago. I'm just not remembering off the top of my head. We did some black and white movies. We did some noir movies. And then to end it all, we did Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid.
Of course.
We were doing this thing for a while.
Of Jerns.
What's that?
Of Jerns. We were picking genres.
Yeah. So we were doing, we were taking genres of movies, and we would do three or four movies in a genre and then do like a parody of them at the end. Because by that point, you've started to pick up on the tropes of the genre.
Sure.
And so to watch a parody at the end of it, it's like, it informs the whole conversation. Because if you do it, if you do the parody at the end, then you've picked up on all the things that kind of inform the parody. So it worked out really well how we did it. But
seems like an odd way to do it, because I'm sort of like, oh, I remember that movie. And
it was, you know what? It was one of those things that I remember being, but when you watch it after seeing a bunch of noir picks,
yeah,
it works. I mean, you have a whole lot more appreciation for what they were doing, for what they tried to do and what they accomplished in doing it. And then to realize that they were taking footage from old movies and blending the character into it, it gave me a great appreciation for that movie, far greater than I would have had just watching it cold.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that movie since I was like...
We'll catch it again. Watch it again now with a different eye.
Yeah, if you watch a couple, watch LA Confidential, then watch that one again. Because as a 10-year-old, because I probably saw it for the first time when I was somewhere between 10 and 15. And it's like, it's a goofy, funny movie. You know, there's not
much.
But
you don't know why
it.
It's so goofy and funny.
Yeah, I gained a lot more appreciation for it after having seen other noir.
That was a movie made for movie fans.
Yeah, it really was. It was. So recently there was a mini series on, I think it was TNT, called Mob City.
Mob City, yeah.
Did you see that?
I did indeed.
Yeah. It's pretty good. So it's a mob era television series, mini series. It was It was 6 episodes, but they played it as 3 weeks of 2-hour a night shows. It told a story set mostly in LA, very little bit in Vegas, of basically that period in time when Bugsy Siegel was running the mob
in LA.
In LA and building up
Vegas.
And it was around the time that he got arrested shortly before he got killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that period of time. And it was very much a noir mob story. There was nothing surprising about the fact that it was noir. It like every trope was just pounded on. And the thing was, it was really well made and the story was really well told. And that was like, if you're going to watch a mob, if you want to point to something that was made in the last, that was made this year, but in the last 5 years is a good example of what a mob movie, or in that case, miniseries is, it had everything a good mob story did, and it wasn't surprising. It was it kind of was like what you would expect. It's like if I wanted another Godfather,
this would be the good start.
I kind of got it.
A more modern one.
It wasn't. I mean, it's not. The acting is nowhere near the same caliber. Not even close. But
are you talking about
on Mob City? But
I don't know that John Bernthal.
I don't know who that is.
He's Shane from.
Shane! Oh God, he was terrible. Jesus, he was so bad.
Oh, he does all right. Fine.
For the tortured cop that he was.
Yeah, of course. He doesn't have to do.
It was the character. It was he was cast for that character, just for his acting ability as that character.
It is just to he's always that guy.
But it had Simon Pegg playing a little bit out of type, and I kind of liked that.
Way out of type.
I liked that. That was really good.
He was American.
Yeah,
the accent is really off-putting. Like, you know, he did a really great job, but it's like that noise can't come out of that face.
Yeah,
the two just don't go together.
Right. So, but. That movie is a really good, or that show is a really good example of, this is a stereotypical mob movie, but done for people who are fans of that genre. And it's not cheap. It's just not a cardboard cutout of it. It's somebody really understood what they were making and made it. And that's great. And that's kind of the same feeling I got from LA Confidential in that noir, that Black Dahlia thriller detective story, it was just really well made.
But yeah, a few people realize the noir genre itself was based on the limitations of budget and film process at the time. All those tropes which we attribute now was because of their limited budgets, their limited ability to use different lenses and cameras, so they worked with the best they could do.
Yeah, well, I'm not even talking about...
But they made it into like an art.
The that's style the... and the shots. I'm mm-hmm. talking about the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way you build the characters.
The characters.
It's a character-driven story, yes. Right.
You had the, you know, you have the femme fatale. You have the dirty cops. You have the good guy
fighting the system.
Who's, yeah, the grizzled anti-hero.
Yeah, who's the anti-hero? And I mean, it filled all those tropes, and they're wearing their tropes on their sleeves, but
yeah,
it's well done. It's
yeah.
I'm not faulting it because it hits those tropes. It
yeah.
It just tried uses them and well.
Used them well. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
This movie makes me kind of sad because I was actually looking at Curtis Hanson's history because this movie was really, really great, and then he just didn't make anything else. Well, he made a couple of really terrible movies, as I recall, and then, but it's like...
Well, I think this, like, he just kind of suffered from the problem is he had to really work to get this movie done. There was a long time of rewrites on the screenplay. There was studio resistance to... giving him a big enough budget to make it work.
Yeah.
But he worked around all that stuff, and because of all his workarounds and his choices, it actually came out to be a great movie. But the problem is he had such a good success that when he was given more resources, he got sloppy.
Yeah.
And so his next movie after – the next movie he directed after L.A. Confidential was Wonder Boys.
Oh, is that the one with Michael Douglas?
Yeah. Yeah.
That one was good. I did that
He directed an episode of Greg the Bunny, the TV series. Then his next movie was 8 Mile.
Mm-hmm. Which depends on which side of the hip-hop world you're from. Is either the greatest thing ever created or it's the most stereotypical thing ever created.
I mean,
it is Rocky told in hip-hop.
In hip-hop, yeah. It's hip-hop Rocky.
It is.
It was like, I mean,
once I realized that, I actually kind of appreciated it for what it was.
Yeah. Well, and of course, I'm of that generation where that was, you know, it was supposed to really matter to my generation. But then I looked at it later and I was like,
no.
You know what? This movie was a soundtrack. Like the soundtrack, I still have the soundtrack.
It was a star vehicle for Eminem.
Great soundtrack.
Sure was.
But it was not a great movie.
Okay, he didn't have to work too far out of his character.
And which is why he's never acted again, because he's not an actor.
Because that is the pinnacle of his acting ability, and anything else
sure.
out of that, he'd be a disaster.
So after that, he made In Her Shoes.
Which was awful.
I have not seen that.
It was awful.
Lucky You, which actually, I'm pretty sure that Deuce and I did that movie a long time ago.
Which one is
that's that the one with Eric Bana. And what's her name? Drew Barrymore? Is that maybe?
It sounds forgettable.
It was set in Vegas. He was a hustler, gambler. Horatio Sands, Drew Barrymore, Deborah Messing.
Yeah, I think
Robert Duvall, Robert Downey Jr.
Jeez.
2007. So I'm pretty sure and. This movie is very memorable to me because it was one of the first movies I saw in digital. It was one of the first digitally made the digital presentation movies that I saw, and it was impressive. It was impressive to see a movie presented in digital.
Yeah.
Especially because there was a lot of detail, and we were seeing it on kind of a smaller screen, and there's a lot of detail to. Because he keeps looking at his cards under his, you know, kind of how poker players do.
Right.
And it could the presentation was crisp. And I just remember how pristine the image looked. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool.
Yeah.
And so for that, it was memorable. But it was pretty much a generic, kind of noirish story with his down-in-the-luck schmo who's just trying to make his way in Vegas and...
So what I'm hearing though is it's no LA Confidential.
Like it is no.
Yeah, I feel bad because it's like, well, you know, he hasn't made a really good movie since.
That's the problem is when you're using somebody else's work and not your own. I mean, this guy, this was his own idea, and he was able to put his own vision into it.
Sure.
But when you become a contract director and you're working with somebody else's screenplay. And you're just doing it. Hey, here, make this movie. I mean, you're not. You're either going to put your heart into it or you're not.
So, looking at his writing credits, the last two movies he wrote the screenplay for were L.A. Confidential, and Lucky You.
Yeah.
And
well, and
lucky
an
you,
Academy
lucky
Award
you
for L.A. Confidential, not
I believe so.
Yes, he won an Oscar for best original screenplay.
I thought it was based.
He adapted James Ellery's novel of the same name, but he greatly changed a lot of it. He basically boiled it down to the three plot lines instead of the eight that Elmore had. It made it a much more compact film. I mean, a much more compact story.
Sure.
Which Elmore was perfectly happy with, according to the reviews. He said it was the only way it could probably...
It's really the only way
you could have done
books. You should not do what The Hobbit did, which is make books longer. That's all I'm saying.
Don't say anything. We'll talk about that
next
time.
Yes, I've had my milk.
James Ellroy wrote the novel. And Hansen and Brian Elgland were credited for the screenplay.
Should say best adapted screenplay.
Right.
Yeah.
But not original. Yeah.
So let's talk for a few minutes about the acting. This movie had a pretty big cast.
It did.
Unknowns. Well, at the time, they were unknowns. The only really name actors there were Kevin Spacey and maybe James Cromwell.
Danny DeVito
were in Kim Basinger, but that was still early in Danny DeVito's film career.
What?
Well, yeah, it's still, he had only done a few other movies before that.
He was in a Batman movie, though.
Yeah, but that was a...
Get much bigger than that, you know?
Yeah, but not as himself. I mean, not as a... I mean, War of the Roses was before that. Again, he's only a...
But,
he was other than another...
I think he was kind of... I mean, if you're going to say, like, who was famous at the time... Because the only thing that I remember at the time... Now, granted, we came out in
97.
So, I was a teenager at the time. And the only press that I remember at the time was, look at Kim Basinger, you know?
Yeah, wait a minute. I'm going to have to call BS on Danny DeVito not being in much. Because he was also in... He was also in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
The remake. Well...
The original.
The original? I don't remember him being in there.
He was there. Before L.A. Confidential, he was in The Rainmaker, Mars Attacks, Space Jam, Get Shorty.
He was a voice, yes. Get Shorty.
Junior.
Hell yeah, Junior.
Jack the Bear, which was his vehicle. I mean, that was...
Yeah.
He was Jack.
Sure.
Batman Returns, Hoffa, War of the Roses... Twins, Throw Mama from the Train.
Mm-hmm. I stand corrected. Then.
My Little Pony, the movie.
Oh my God.
Ruthless People.
Mm-hmm.
So, but to be fair, he also had a really minor role in this movie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Granted, he was the de facto narrator for part of it.
Yeah.
Part of it.
Yeah.
Until he wasn't anymore. But his role was pretty small in this.
You know, memorable.
Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, it was his voice you hear first.
Sure.
So, yeah, we had Kevin Spacey, Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, James Cromwell, Kim Basinger, Danny DeVito, David Strathairn, Ron Rifkin. We start getting to names of people who are a little less well-known. But
the young Simon Baker.
The young Simon Baker. Playing the gay...
Actor.
Yeah, they didn't pull too many punches with throwing different character types in there and then abusing them for the types of characters that they were.
Yeah.
Well, Crowe and Pierce didn't really have much of a filmography at that point. I mean, they picked Kevin Spacey because he fit that role just perfectly as the Hollywood, quote-unquote, Hollywood-influenced police officer.
Right.
Who was more actor than he was police officer.
Sure. And he was great.
And yes, and he fit that part so perfectly.
Because I believed him almost none as a cop.
Mm-hmm.
But perfectly as that guy who sets everything up so that he can get in the papers.
No, I sort of feel like nobody does smarm like he does smarm.
Oh, God,
like
yeah.
He's the master of smarmy, sleazy characters.
Yeah. Swimming with Sharks is probably one of my favorite movies that he was in.
And have you seen House of...
I have not watched that yet.
Yeah, you know, sleazy character. But of course, you know,
he plays that so perfectly.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I like the intricate plot that they weren't... There was... It's not as straightforward.
Mm-hmm. It's zigzags all over the place.
There's some red herrings that they get thrown in there to keep the story moving and keep the audience on their toes. I like how like no one is really safe in this movie. Also, I like that. I appreciate that. You know, there's a body count, especially for a thriller like this.
Yeah,
I don't mind when people die and people that you don't expect die. It's like when your narrator dies. What?
Yep.
Whoa! I was not expecting them to go there.
Yep. Yeah.
And fortunately, I'd been away from the movie long enough that some of the details of that had been lost to the fog of my brain.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me because there's stuff about it just because it's so the plot is so convoluted. Like I've seen this movie so many times, but then there's just stuff that I did not remember. Like it took me a while to like I'm actively thinking about it. Like wait, who did it? Oh wait, yeah, now I remember who did it. Like the one integral part that you would remember who the bad guy was. Took me forever to try to remember. Like oh wait, why were they at the Night Owl again? Oh all right. So yeah, it's just so the plot is so concentrated. Which I don't see as a bad thing.
No, not at all. I mean, if you're trying to make this movie into a franchise, that's bad.
Yeah. Well, the fact is that this movie was convoluted with just in its boiled down form. You can only imagine what the novel's like.
Sure.
Which has 8 plot lines running through it.
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting. Considering the story, this is, I might consider checking that out.
Yeah, but the thing, I mean, I did appreciate how... like you said, Russell, like, I don't think anybody in this country had ever heard of Guy Pearce before this or Russell Crowe, really.
Yeah. They were both new.
This was pre-Gladiator.
Yes.
Yeah. Which,
and especially as they're not Americans either. So that they were fairly well known in Australia and New Zealand, but outside of the United States, boom, that was it. I mean, not exactly their first movie, but just they weren't well known.
Right.
This is what put them on the map.
Yeah. And this is kind of like the young Russell Crowe, you know, back before he kind of started doing crappier movies. Like, you know, wow, he was really good. Really good actor.
So I'm looking back through his filmography, and I recognize 3 names of the, looks like a dozen or two movies that he was in. Romper Stomper, which I only know of that not because of the movie so much as, wasn't that the name of his band?
No, 30-odd-foot of grunts.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Don't ask me why I know that.
Yeah, you're right. Now
know that.
I remember Virtuosity, and I remember The Quick and the Dead, and he was in both of those.
Oh yes,
both in '95.
The Quick and the Dead. Well, how many people saw The Quick and the Dead though?
I was one of them. I actually really liked them.
I know. I love that movie, but I did not see it until many years later. Yeah. I had to discover it later.
Yeah, and it's shortly after that that his filmography really takes off. The Insider,
right?
Mystery Alaska, Proof of Life, Gladiator, Beautiful Mind, Master and Commander, Cinderella Man, A Good Year. I mean, everything from here on out is just...
Yeah, it was quality work. It's quality roles that he got that he fit in really well with.
Which is really good considering, I mean, he did a great job in this movie, and then Gladiator happened. But then he started making good movies again.
No kidding. I hated her.
I liked it.
I'm not a fan. So I was kind of peeking back and seeing.
But Guy Pearce.
I don't think there was much, because I don't really remember Guy Pearce until Memento.
Yeah.
I forgot that he was in a movie before Memento. Like, so I don't even know if there'll be anything to recognize before that. Interestingly enough, Guy Pearce has 2 more movie credits than Russell Crowe does. Russell Crowe has 51 and Guy Pearce has 53. Let's see. For that, no, there's not much. Not much for that at all. He was in Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Oh, was he now?
I guess so. Immediately before LA Confidential, he was in a movie called The Devil Game, Dating the Enemy, a TV series, Snowy River, The McGregor Saga, Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Flynn, where he played Errol Flynn, and... Yeah, TV shows, a movie called Hunting in 91. So, yeah, his career. But then shortly after that, he makes some other crappy movies.
Well, you know.
Woundings, Ravenous, A Slipping Down Life, Rules of Engagement. I saw what Rules of Engagement. That movie was not. Memento, Time Machine, Count of Monte Cristo.
Which I also saw. I think he's just kind of, you know, if he's working as a kind of a for hire character guy, that's fine. I'd be great. Like he does.
And then he does
this role.
But he was also really in The King's Speech too. I mean, it was the lead role in that.
Sure.
Yeah. Which was a brilliant piece of, a brilliant little movie.
Because I think he's very.
And I thought he was fantastic as Aldrich Killian in Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
He was awesome in Iron Man 3.
I mean, occasionally, again, talk like every smarmy. Actor, he gets a certain number of contractual obligation roles and the ones that you really do shine in that were kind of written for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Russell Crowe has just a couple fewer roles, but it looks like Guy Pearce did a lot of TV work because a lot of these
bread and butter work.
They're TV, but Russell Crowe has had consistently higher profile roles and higher profile movies after this.
Sure. The one thing I think is most interesting is that the most high profile award won was Kim Basinger Oscar, and she didn't really work much after this.
No.
Because this was kind of like her, so I remember the press at the time was talking about, if you were going to talk about this movie, you can't really talk about the lead characters because nobody really knew who they were, so everybody's talking about Kim Basinger.
Well, and I mean, even the image they show of this movie is the same one that I remember from the VHS.
Yeah.
And the prominent person, she's taken up half of the cover.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the background are Kevin Spacey and Russell Crowe.
Yeah. But it's kind of a, you know, I think it's kind of a shame because she didn't really, thought she did a great job this kind of role. It was kind of, it seemed like the kind of role she was.
Yeah, after this she made I Dreamed of Africa, Bless the Child, People I Know.
And Eighth Mile.
Cellular.
The Sentinel.
She was in Graduate.
Mm-hmm. Up and Coming, yep. Yeah.
I still haven't seen that. I got to make that happen.
Yeah.
But she's got two more movies coming out here shortly. So I'm Here and One Square Mile.
Yeah. I mean, and not to say that she's not working, but it's like, it just seems kind of I don't know, another example of how Hollywood is not terribly kind to women over 40.
Hollywood is not terribly kind to women, period.
Period. Yes. But especially.
When
women
you're
of a certain age.
Women of a certain look when they're younger. Look at somebody like Kathy Bates.
That's true, because she still plays character roles for the most part.
Right. It's not about her looks, which some of Kim Basinger roles were all about her looks.
Yeah.
In Batman, in L.A. Confidential. Sure. It was because she fit a look.
But still, I still think it's rather unfortunate that she could have gotten but didn't.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't look like she was too badly hurting for work there. I mean, her filmography goes on quite a while. I mean, maybe not as high profile stuff, but hey, in Hollywood, any work is good work. The fact that your agent. I mean, even if you're in a minor role, at least your name stays out there. I mean, there's many actors and actresses that, you know, make one or two good movies and then never get called back again.
Her filmography lists 51 credits as an actress.
Which is about the same as Russell Crowe's in terms of.
But she was not working a whole lot.
To be fair, most of her work was before this one. Wayne's World 2, Cool World, Batman, My Stepmother is an Alien, Nine and a Half Weeks.
Yeah. A very underrated film.
Never Say Never Again. I forgot that she was in that. She was in the alternate Bond movie.
Mm-hmm. The one with Sean Connery returns, but it's 007, but not as James Bond.
Some TV work. She was in an episode of $6 Million Man. Oh, holy cow. And Charlie's Angels. Man, that's saying something.
What a hottie.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else about this one?
Not really. The other side is it's not a bad way to spend 2 hours. I mean, if you want a thriller.
Yeah,
it's a good solid thriller. Some good action, not a lot of it, but it's not necessary.
It's in a war movie, so all the action is wrapped up at the end.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Not afraid to kill off characters, even ones that you don't expect you'd see killed off, because there was a few of them that surprised me. Even now, seeing it after having seen it before, Because I'd forgotten that there were a few characters that don't make it to the end of the movie.
Sure. I had forgotten about James Cromwell's, that accent thing that he does.
Yeah.
I guess I had forgiven it because watching it again, it was not good. But yeah, otherwise, it's like I really don't have anything to say about it necessarily other than James Cromwell, but the rest of it quite good.
Yeah, you get a chance to see a couple of actors who are working consistently and making some pretty good stuff in some very early roles.
Yeah.
And you could see the baby mentalist before his wife and family were killed. His wife and daughter were killed.
Is that the premise of The Mentalist?
You don't know the premise of The Mentalist? Fantastic.
I've never seen a single episode.
The Mentalist is actually a really good show.
Yeah. I'm not going to invest my time in that.
So the premise is he was a mentalist, a charlatan, a person who read fortunes, basically, who was one of those TV, I'm talking to your dead family member kind of person.
John Edwards type.
Yes. Yeah. And a serial killer killed his family basically to throw it in his face that, hey, if you were really what you said you were, you would have figured, you would have been able to.
Seen this coming.
And it broke him.
So a serial killer skeptic, huh?
And it broke him. And he spent time in a, he spent some time in a institutionalized. And then when he came out, he became he became the skeptic, shutting those kind of people down and working with the California Bureau of Investigation, the CBI, to help them solve crimes so that he could also get closer to their serial killer files on this guy so he could bring that guy help. So he could learn more about him, see if he figure out who he was so he could kill him.
Gotcha.
And they just, like, within the last 2 months, this show's been going on for a while, 6-8 years. And they just wrapped that storyline. He caught and killed the serial killer. Huh. And then they advanced the story a year. Huh. It was like, that's pretty awesome.
Ballsy.
Yeah. And they have no plans on stopping the show. They're just, they basically did a second pilot. So if you were ever thought about catching up, watching it, you can go back like 3 episodes and watch the second pilot and just start watching from there. Because they reset everything. Huh. He's now working for the FBI. Half the characters have left the show. And they've written them off to ride off into the sunset. And a few, the two characters that they're carrying with them are the two interesting characters to carry with him. So.
But it's a procedural though, right?
It's procedural. It's less detective-y than clever skeptic kind of stuff. Because have you seen any of Sherlock?
The BBC
one?
Yeah.
So I just watched the first episode of that just within the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of similarities between those characters. He's not as asshole-y as Sherlock is.
That's the best part.
So I watched about the first 20 minutes of it and then I had to stop for some reason. I was like, I don't even know if I'll be able to finish watching it. And then I get to the scene in the first one where he walks into the crime scene and he's approaching the police and he's like talking to the girl and he goes talks to the guy and he's like, so your wife's out of town, huh? It's like, how would you know that? Because you smell like that and so does she. Oh, and she must have been scrubbing your floors looking at the condition of her knees. And it was like, oh, I'm in. I'm now in for this ride. And Martin Freeman is really good too.
Yeah. I'm not saying anymore.
You can be wrong. It's okay. You're allowed. All right. Next week, we will have more about The Hobbit.
Oh, boy.
I don't know what we're doing after that. We'll figure something out.
Well, we got a whole bunch of stuff available. It's coming out. Nebraska's finally is going to hit Redbox. So,
what's Nebraska? Yeah.
It's that the one movie. Well, it's a movie essentially about the the old man who thinks he won the lottery, and he's dragging his son across the state of Nebraska to try to pick up the money he thinks he's going to get.
Oh, that sounds good.
Starring Bruce Dern.
Mm-hmm.
That could be good.
Well, it's won about five Golden Globes so far, yeah. And it's a heavy Oscar contender, so it might be a good one to pick up on. It's a very character-driven story.
And it's on DVD at this point?
Yeah, I think it's just now hitting Redbox.
If there was only an app we could use.
If only there was a magic box with all the answers to everything.
I've seen the ads for it, so...
Well, I mean, I know it was briefly in theaters.
It's an art film. It hit all the art houses for a 2-week run, and
one of the reasons
got swallowed up by all the big Christmas blockbuster movies.
Yeah. Hey, I had to see Wolf of Wall Street, which was also very good.
Will Forte?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yep, in a serious role.
It is not streaming anywhere yet.
Yeah, it's too early.
It's not available for rental yet.
Okay.
And it is not available for purchase.
We also got Her to do too, so it's hitting wide release now.
Yeah.
Now that the Christmas.
And I don't know what your Coen Brothers coverage is.
We did a Coen Brothers set there for a while. we did a couple of series where we did directors.
I took a college class in the Coen Brothers.
Whoa.
Yeah.
They are now college level.
Yeah. Well,
it's not the Coen Brothers anymore. It's the Coen Twins.
Is it the Coens?
That was the Coens.
The Wachowskis.
Oh, the Wachowskis. Yeah, excuse me. I keep thinking of the Wachowskis. It's now the Coen sister and brother.
Yes. But no, the Coen Brothers
are still on their...
They're still brothers.
They're still brothers.
Yeah, but I took a college class, which involved 4-credit watching... Whoa. Yeah, going in for a couple of weeks and watching a movie, talking about it. Yeah, it's good.
4-credit hours, not bad for sitting through Fargo.
Yeah, well...
And a whole bunch of others.
Yeah, well, it's also my first introduction to Blood Soul, which is...
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
All right. Let's be done.
Okay. We'll see y'all next week.
See you next week.